following is a special KMOX sports presentation.
Welcome to the Strike Zone on KMOX, presented by Graybar. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX, but once a week we do our special Strike Zone Hour brought to you by Graybar, and we're very happy to be able to do this each and every week. We always do our Building the Future segment, and generally we're talking about like minor league players coming up and things like that, but there's been more talk about what's the Cardinals' future inside of Busch Stadium in downtown St. Louis. Building the Future, sponsored by Graybar, your distributor for electrical and data communication needs. You just heard the great Maria Kina on news at the top of the hour. If you were listening last hour before we got things started at 6 o'clock, Maria had a story about the Cardinals and possibly asking City of St. Louis, St. Louis County, State of Missouri, I don't know if it would ever get across the river at all, about some money to keep Busch Stadium viable. Maria, thanks for hanging out for a few minutes.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Well, apparently what happened here, Bill DeWitt Jr., or excuse me, the third, kind of floated this last week, saying that, well, he might be seeking some public funding in order to finance renovations to Busch. Now, this isn't to build a whole new stadium. It's just to spruce it up, you know, bring it up to date. So we talked with Mark Harder, who is a councilman out in St. Louis County, and he says he does not think that county residents would be up for this, because I imagine you'd have to put it on the ballot for them. They're not just going to give them the money. Mayor Jones, we asked her about it, and she said that she did receive, we got a spokesperson sent us a release. She said she received it. She's acknowledged that the Cardinals are an invaluable asset to the region, but she says any conversation about public investment is way premature. So it looked, and the woman who's running against her, Alderwoman Kara Spencer, didn't say no, absolutely not. She just said she isn't exactly right now outright against the request, but isn't 100% behind it either.
It's interesting because I understand politicians not having the stomach to pay for things like that, but at the same time, sports are so much the front door of downtown metropolitan areas, and they just they got to get it figured out. I'm not taking a stance one way or another, but it seems you wouldn't want somebody just, I think, saying no without understanding the full idea of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing that, I don't know, and you would certainly know this better than me, the thing that might come up, though, is St. Louis SC.
Yeah.
You know?
Because they took care of it themselves.
They took care of it.
Yeah.
They didn't come to the people. But that appears to be the only league that does that.
Yeah, you look across the country and most of these ball, and they just agreed to a new ballpark for the Tampa Bay Rays, and that's going to be a combination private public. What I'm noticing the trend now is they're capping the public portion of it. So let's say it's a $1 billion project, and half of it's going to come from the team and half of it's going to come from the public. I've been noticing more often on these deals when there is public money that they're capping it. So if there's overruns or anything like that, everything else goes to the team. But that we're still seeing stadiums being built and being proposed across the country where there is a lot of public money. And watch what's going on right now on the other side of the state.
Yes,
with
exactly.
The Chiefs and the Royals. And there was just some news this past week about the Royals maybe moving into a different area. And there's that there's definitely going to be public money there. The state of Missouri doesn't want to lose the Chiefs. Not that they want to lose the Royals, but they certainly don't want to lose the Chiefs.
No.
So you got, there's, everybody's got to give a little, I think.
I think that's the thing. And you know, so many people, I know there are adamant people against it right off the bat. No, they don't want to hear it. Nothing. No public financing for sports facilities. But like you said, it's kind of all over the country that you see this. And then I know they always threaten to pull up. Mm-hmm. Or pull out, you know, to get out of the city. And then that's always an issue because you can't have the Cardinals, you can't have the Chiefs leave the state. I mean, how do you let that happen? You can't.
No, you can't. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think, like, from a governmental standpoint, the person who's likely to be the next governor is going to probably be the best possible person to keep the Chiefs and the Royals in the state of Missouri based off everything that I've read.
You know, Governor Parson was crazy about them.
Yeah.
He was really, Chiefs were his boys.
I, kind of in the same realm, but I saw some, I think I read it in the Post-Dispatch in the last day or two, where Bill DeWitt III talked a lot about trying to redevelop the area between Busch Stadium and the Convention Center, right where we're sitting right now, where the KMOX studios are right here in that area, and trying to, when you think about where City plays their games, kind of connected to SLU, going to Union Station, getting to Busch Stadium, going to the Dome. Mm-hmm. If you can get all that area connected in a way where people are more comfortable walking around, it would do so much for the city.
That would be huge.
Yeah.
It really would be. Because, I mean, look at when everybody was like, I don't know about this Ballpark Village. Well, look at what it's done. And if you get that all connected there, and you, where you keep everybody all together, all the sports facilities, you can go here to a restaurant, here to a bar, that would be huge, because people would feel safer if they were to see that, where you're in an area where it's lit, well lit, and you're getting to your destination without, you know, looking over your shoulder all the time.
People never, you don't feel unsafe going to Ballpark Village.
No.
And you can go two blocks off of Busch Stadium on the wrong night and start to feel very,
very
uncomfortable.
Unsafe. Yes.
Yeah. So, and I'm glad that the Cardinals are very involved. I know it's the Cardinals, and I think it's Stiefel and maybe Spire.
Yeah.
Those are the groups that are really trying to push this. And just for, I mean, us walking around here, KMOX, it'd be nice.
Because, I mean, it's, you know, it can be creepy.
Yeah.
I came out of here the other night and heard gunshots.
Yeah, it's a normal thing.
It can be creepy.
You guys tell me you don't like our lovely courtyard out here our studios.
It's lovely.
Yes.
It's lovely.
Lovely to
didn't
some.
Didn't the dog park used to be somewhere around here? I don't even see the dogs here anymore.
So all things to kind of keep an eye out on when it comes to the Cardinals and Busch Stadium and downtown and everything. Maria, thanks for hanging out for a few
minutes.
Thanks
for having me.
That's Maria Kina. We will take a break, and when we return, we'll be joined by Kevin Wheeler, talk all things Cardinals baseball with him. That's in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. We take you till 8 o'clock this evening. St. Louis City Soccer Report comes up after we're done, as Nate and Jen will be with you till 10 o'clock this evening. Cardinals baseball back at tomorrow as they're going to open up a series against the Brewers. We were hoping that this series would really matter for something, but all of a sudden the Brewers find themselves 11 games up in the NL Central. To talk all things Cardinals, we bring in our buddy Kevin Wheeler. You, of course, hear him during the Dave Glover Show and Total Information PM, former host of this very show. Hey, Wills.
Man, you hear me a lot. That's unfortunate. Yeah. I apologize.
Your preview videos on all social media channels as well.
Yeah, another one coming tomorrow.
All right.
Getting ready for this big series.
I'm bummed that it's an 11-game difference. This series had the chance to mean so much, and it still has meaning, but it's very different kind of meaning.
You know, like 3 weeks ago, what did it get cut down to? Like three games behind the Brewers?
Yeah,
three and a half.
Yeah.
Man, that happened fast. I feel like Ron Burgundy. Boy, that escalated quickly.
It really did. And here's the thing that I just am having a hard time putting my hands around. Because we all watch sports, and we know how things are supposed to go. And they have a good deadline. They bring in a couple players that everybody's excited about. This isn't like just sports guys speak. I'm in the Cardinals clubhouse, and after the trade deadline, I can tell you that was as positive of an environment as the clubhouse had been in God knows how long. They have that series against the Rangers where they outscore them in the final two games, and it was 18-2. Everything is great.
Yeah.
And then they lose 3 out of 4 against the Cubs. And even with a series win in there against the Rays, it just really hasn't been the same since.
Stop hitting.
Yeah.
I mean, they just stopped hitting. And there's not a lot you can do about it. It's not all like a super easy fix in real time. But I found myself the last 2 years confused by what's happening more than anything else. You can't blame managers, coaches, front office people when proven players don't play to the level they've shown over a number of years. So like the way we've been talking about this throughout the day today, and even with, you know, for me with friends off the air, is that like I think the plan for this team coming into the year made a lot of sense. This wasn't like we're just going to wing it. They had a good plan. And what went wrong initially and has continued to be wrong, but like at the core of things going wrong are two star hitters not hitting like stars. That's at the core of it, right?
Sure.
If those two guys were hitting, and again, I hate to keep coming back to that, but a lot of the other things are more manageable, right? Gorman slumps and Nootbaar's injured list stint and Jordan Walker struggles. A lot of those things are more manageable when your core guys are what you expect. You know, when he wasn't hurt, Wilson Contreras has mostly been fine and mostly been great this year.
He's the
little bit struggling here lately, but mostly he's been great.
You can make the argument that coming into the season, Goldschmidt, Arenado, Walker, Gorman, Contreras were, and Nootbaar,
yeah,
were the six guys that you were going to lean on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To be the, to drive the bus.
Yeah.
And one guy in Contreras has done his part, and then you got a couple guys
expected, right,
and you got a couple guys in Alec Burleson and Mason Winn who there were not expectations on who have stepped forward. But when five of the six guys who are supposed to be your main guys have just not performed, that's a problem.
Yeah, and the thing that we've seen that connects last year and this year has been almost the lack of a plan B, right? Like when things go wrong, what do you do? Because you're not going to make up for two star players being basically league average hitters, right? But you can do other things to maximize your team's performance. You can play matchups. You can have a more balanced roster that allows you, oh my God, we're not good against lefties. We should probably do something about that. Rather than just like, nope, we're going to keep doing the same thing all year. And then in the last 35, 40 games, we hear, well, we got to play matchups now because we're desperate. Well, if that's the right way to go, shouldn't you have been doing that for months?
Probably.
If playing, whether it's Walker or anybody else, it's not really my point. But if the argument right now is that you're not going to see Burleson, Nootbaar, Gorman, those guys against lefties, and you're not going to see Walker and Pham against righties, I'm talking starting, then why hasn't that been the plan all along? And why didn't we adapt sooner to correct this problem, knowing that your stars were not your stars? And I'm like, because you've got guys that I hate doing this because I don't know if Thomas Ajayi is going to be a good major league hitter or not. I don't know if Lucan Baker could be a good platoon bat or not. I don't know. What I do know is that you've been carrying players on your bench that are not helping you. And it's not their fault they're not helping you. They're just redundant based on what else you have, right?
Yeah.
So I'm talking about Crawford and Carpenter. Carpenter is just a player that doesn't have a spot because you have a first baseman in Goldschmidt. He's not your best option at DH, and he can't play anywhere else, and he's left-handed. So he's not providing you that late-inning damage that you need because all of your guys that you would need to hit for late in games are lefties who don't hit lefties, which is what Carpenter is. And then Brandon Crawford is a defense-first guy who was, I think, a necessary add at the beginning of the year when you didn't know what Mason Winn was. When you didn't know for sure what he was going to be, you needed a shortstop insurance plan because they didn't have another shortstop.
No.
You couldn't go into this year with like Fermin or counting on Donovan coming off Tommy John. You couldn't do that. So I thought it made total sense. But at some point you get to a stage where, okay, that doesn't matter anymore. Right now you've got 38 games left. That element doesn't matter. What's he going to play? Three of those games?
Maybe.
And that depends on how it goes. Maybe more later if you fall out of it. But like the point is, he's playing once a week at most, but you could use a right-handed bat a lot more than that. But there's a plan, and we're not going to deviate. And it's the same argument for the defense in center. It's fine. It's great. It was perfect for 2 months when you were hitting.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not hitting, you got to adapt. And, you know, we're hearing all this now about, we're going to play the matchups, but you're still going to play a terrible hitter in center field.
Yeah, and look, to his credit, Victor Scott's been a little bit better this time than the time before, but you couldn't have been any worse than what he was before.
And he's not a threat. Like, he's getting more hits, and I'm a fan of Victor Scott. Like, I do think down the road he can be a good player, but it's just, right now, you don't just need defense in center field. You need as many bats in the lineup as you can squeeze into the lineup because you're not hitting. And you're in desperation time. At what point does that desperation show? Now, 3 weeks ago, you weren't there. I totally understand that. That's why I'm always, my complaint is not about any specific move or anything that's not done. It's just the more general vibe of, how do you adapt to the current reality and make it better? And I don't know that anybody's better than that at that than Milwaukee.
Okay, so you mentioned Milwaukee, and
which obviously we're going to see some this
week. I obviously worked there and covered that team for a good number of years. Over my parts of seven seasons with that team, when things were in a really, really bad spot, there'd be a line that you would cross, and it's like, okay, this roster isn't going to look like this tomorrow. We're going to show up to the ballpark, and this is going to be one of those days where they're literally just making moves to make moves. And I'm generally not a fan of just doing something to do it, but when things are not going well, there's some value just shaking up the clubhouse a little bit, doing those sort of things. And I don't think the Cardinals really do that. Like, coming off that Red Series where you got swept and we had an off day,
Yeah. That
would have been a perfect day to come in the next day and just shake things up a little bit. And I didn't see that.
Yeah, and, you know, look, this is a weird spot because, you know, it's coming off of last year, which was also bad, right? So if they have back-to-back losing seasons, that'll be the first time that's happened in full seasons since the 50s.
Yeah, long time.
Since the late 50s. It happened in the strike-shortened years of 94 and 95. But that's different, right? That's short seasons. They have not had full seasons of losing baseball back-to-back since the late 50s. And these things are connected. And I mentioned this earlier on DGS, both with Dave Alone, but also with Bernie Miklas when he joined us, that you look at Milwaukee and they have a young guy, Jackson Churio, hot shot rookie, gets the big contract extension before he ever plays a day in the major leagues and all of that. And for the first 2 months this year, he had like a 575 OPS. He was awful. He was not a good hitter. But they were able to stay with him. And for the last 2 months, he's been an elite player.
Just incredible.
An elite. Yeah. He's been an all-star level player since about June 1st, something in that range. And the Cardinals didn't have that luxury because, again, like last year, early in the year, you're chasing from day one. You're chasing the standings from day one because you got off to a bad start. You don't have the luxury. Well, they don't think they do. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But they didn't think they had the luxury of saying, we're going to keep running Jordan Walker out there. We're going to let him learn it at the major league level. He's failing. He's struggling. It's bad. But the only way to get better is to do it. They have not had that ability because if they did that, fans would kill him. We'd be killing them, right? If you're a team that's chasing for two straight years, and this is where all of this stuff, it all ties together. You can't give Jordan Walker what he needs at the major league level because you're chasing. And I don't know how long they're going to do this whole we're playing matchups thing. I mean, another few days like these last few, you might as well just play the kids, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you might as well just be like, okay, Jordan, every day, buddy, go get them. And, you know, maybe even do that with another call-up or two because at some point you got to start playing for next year. We're not quite there, but I mean, you got to win.
They're five games back in the wild card needing to jump over three teams.
You have to get to at least 86 wins.
Yeah.
Which means you need to go 25-13 the rest of the way. That's 107-win baseball that you need to play for the rest of the year. It's definitely doable. I mean, like, it happened in 2011, right? That whole, it was nine games at the end of August.
They were close to that during that May 12th period on for the next month.
But we can't count on that.
No.
I mean, if the rest of this week goes badly, like if this coming week goes badly, you might as well just think about 2025.
And you know the Brewers know it and can smell the blood in the water.
I mean, if you're them, the Cardinals for so many years were that team.
Yeah.
They were the one in that position that could take the Cubs or the Brewers or the Reds or the Pirates, whoever was a challenger at the time, and just at this time of year, put them down. Boom. We can basically end their hope. Not statistically, right? Like, not mathematically. The Cardinals won't be eliminated this week. But spiritually, right? Psychologically, you can be if you look up and you're 14 games out of first place and eight games out of a wild card.
Yeah, let's say the Brewers come in and sweep the Cardinals. And I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so
but
either.
Let's say it happens. At that point, you are probably seven games back, and there is a very good chance that the Cubs and Reds and Pirates, depending on what they do over the next 3 days, have all jumped over you.
Yeah. I think Sonny Gray nailed it. I mean, I think it was Sonny that said it, that basically they need a 7 or 8 game winning streak.
Yeah.
Like, that's your hope. You've got to go on a streak where you win every game for a week and a half.
And it's
at least.
It's going to be against really good teams.
Well, right now, it has to be.
Yeah.
I mean, because you go from Milwaukee. What's after them again? Is it the Padres?
It's twins.
Twins.
They go to Minnesota,
and then
they come back. So this is the schedule for the next month or so. Home against Milwaukee, at Minnesota, home against the Padres, four games against them, at the Yankees, at Milwaukee, home against Seattle. That takes you through September 8th.
Yeah, and Seattle's struggling right now, so let's not worry about them. But all the other ones, I mean, those are all good teams, yeah. Man. And you're going to have to do it. Like, they're right. It's now. It's between now and the end of the month. You got 8-9 days, and that's it. Or you're going to be playing for next year.
We talk about the Brewers smelling blood in the water. I got to think that Mike Schilt wouldn't mind coming in here with the Padres.
Ooh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, putting them away,
too. You don't
think
he would like to stick it to his old team?
Yeah, I'm sure he would.
I know he has love for his old team.
Yes.
I mean, he has a lot of love for the Cardinals, but he cannot love the way that it ended.
No, he's a human being.
Yeah.
Like, anytime something ends a little bit uncomfortably, you don't wish the best.
Well, we also know he's got that little edge to him, too.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd love to stick that dagger in there.
It's and look, they didn't play poorly against the Dodgers,
no.
But we're at the point of the season now where that doesn't matter. The
right.
only thing that matters now
W's.
Is the wins and the losses.
W's. I mean, and again, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm not trying to, like, pound the table and lay down the law. It's just the reality.
Yeah.
I mean, the math is the math. You have to do that, or within a few days, we're going to start talking about playing for 2025. And, you know, when do you get a look at Sejacy? When do you give Luke and Baker a look against lefties to see if he could be a piece for next year? Like, not even an everyday guy. Although it's funny to say that, right? A guy that's got like 84 mm-hmm. home runs at AAA. You're like, I don't know if he's an everyday guy.
Well, if all of a sudden you're looking at Burleson as being a platoon guy.
What would be wrong with Burleson and Baker as your platoon at first base?
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going.
What would be wrong with that?
That you don't know if Baker...
You don't know if Baker can do it.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's the only thing.
I mean, that's why I'm saying that in a week, if things continue to go badly, you should probably try to find that out.
Yes,
you should probably try to find that out in September. Now, you never know. Like, that's what I mean. I don't ever want to say, like, those guys are the answer, because we don't know. They may not be. But I would like to know more about them before the end of the year rather than waiting until next year to see what it is.
At some point, you got to be fair to the guy. Like, it's not fair to Luke and Baker to just let him sit at AAA and hit home run.
At some point, he's going to be a minor league free agent. You're not going to have any choice
anymore.
I don't
even know what he's a 40-man guy.
He's 27.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an older college guy when he was drafted out of TCU, so he wasn't like an 18-year-old. But, you know, I hate even bringing up just like his particular name. He's just an example, you know, but I don't see any reason why, if you get another week into struggling, why you wouldn't look at guys like that, especially given your current needs.
Right.
And say, man, we got Goldie coming off at the end of the year. What do we want to do? You never fall in love in March or September, right? Well, let's see. I forget who said it. It might have been Casey Stengel, but it was old-timey baseball guy. Don't fall in love in spring training. Don't fall in love with the September call-ups, because it's not a big enough sample size. But you can learn something about those guys, giving them 25 games in the big leagues to see.
If Baker comes back up and does what he did last year with the team, then you go, okay, maybe this is kind of a 4A kind of guy.
Right.
So, yeah, there's something to learn. Wheels, always appreciate it.
All right, have a good night, buddy.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauley. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley, talking all things Cardinals baseball here during a Strike Zone Hour. If you want to join us, you can do so by calling, texting, or tweeting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, or tweet at me at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. What's on Deck, sponsored by Chesterfield Fence and Deck, the sign you have the very best. Cardinals Brewers opening up a 3-game series tomorrow night. It's going to be Eric Fetty against Frankie Montas, two players acquired by their respective clubs around the deadline. 6:45 first pitch from Busch Stadium tomorrow night. Our coverage is set to begin at 5:50. I got a couple phone calls after the conversation I just had with Kevin Wheeler. Let's grab Larry, who has given us a call. Hey, Larry, you're on Sports Open Line.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Doing all right.
So at the beginning of the year, I text you, I picked the Cardinals to go 82-80. You know what? That's not going to happen. They would have to play 21-17 the rest of the year just to play 82-80. I see it. I don't see it happening.
I would agree that is unlikely at this point. Not impossible, but unlikely.
Right. Yesterday's game really aggravates me. First of all, we had runner at the bottom of the order, got two singles in a row. I can't remember what inning it was. We were losing 2-0. Because Nupar hit a home run late in the game, right? Wasn't it like the eighth inning or something?
Yeah.
That made the score 2-1. So we got first and second, nobody out, and we got our leadoff man up. I'm thinking, here's the perfect opportunity to bunt. Get him to second and third with one out. with what we call the heart of our order coming up, right?
Okay.
Why do you agree? Do you bunt there or no?
So what? I'm trying to find it. What inning was? Hold on, I'm looking.
I'm thinking it was. I think it was the seventh
was
inning.
It the sixth when Páez and Scott went back to back on base hits.
Yes.
Then
to Mason, right field.
Okay. So you wanted Mason Winn to put down a bunt.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Mason Winn has been one of your best hitters all season long. I think you've got a much better chance of scoring, letting him swing the bat, than putting a bunt down, especially with a guy like Wilson Contreras coming up next who can strike out, and he ended up grounding into a double play anyway. So, no, I do. Looking back at that situation, I would respectfully, I understand why you say what you say, but I want Mason Winn swinging away with a runner on at second.
Okay. So we disagree there.
Yeah, we do.
Secondly, Tommy Pham is one for 18 against Clayton Kershaw, and he hits him in the three hole. Burleson sits the bench. I don't know if it was time to sit the bench or he keeps him out because Kershaw's a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah,
that's probably.
I mean, Burleson's numbers against lefties are terrible.
Okay, so
do you know how bad?
Wait a minute.
Okay,
it couldn't be any more terrible than 1 for 18, though.
No, you're right. It's not worse than that. But Burleson's numbers this year against lefties, he's a 203 hitter with a sub-600 OPS. I mean, it is. I really, really like Alec Burleson, but his numbers against left-handers are really bad.
And one last thing. You know, the right fielder they called up a couple weeks ago, he just can't square the ball up.
Jordan Walker?
I mean... Yeah, he can't square the ball up. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I don't know. Larry, I appreciate the phone call.
All right.
Yeah. Look, Walker hits the ball hard. When he makes contact, he hits the ball hard. His hard hit rate has always been there. I think he's had, towards the end of his first stint with the team, he started not making as solid a contact. He's still doing something right now where he is trying to drive the ball more, and that's something that he has to do. I'm not worried about Jordan Walker's ability to hit the ball hard. I'm worried about his ability to drive the ball, and those are two different things, I think. And Walker's got to figure out how to drive the ball. I am concerned about Walker not playing every day. They're doing the left right stuff with that, and I understand that situation. But as a young guy, I would like to see him get more of an opportunity. And the Cardinals are stuck in this really tough area where trying to win every day, but also not stop the development of a player for sure.
Here's a question for you, Matt Pauly. I'm curious if the Cardinals, they're in this spot right now where we're not sure how long they're going to be even in the race. Are we okay for these next few weeks platooning Walker? Is the next few weeks of platooning Walker for the potential to put the best team on the field, is that going to be detrimental to his development?
I hope not. Probably not. Like you have to value winning games over. That's where roster construction comes into the issue, because you were basically forced to bring up Jordan Walker because you were forced to bring up a right-handed bat who can also play the outfield. And they just didn't have enough flexibility on the roster to be able to do that. That's why they're forced to run out Victor Scott there and have him on the roster. And admittedly, Scott's done a much better job at the plate here on this second stint than he did his first stint, but he's still not hitting, you know, especially well. But you're stuck in this situation because you're so hell-bent on having a good defensive center fielder out there that you're willing to take the lack of offense. Now, if Lars Nootbaar was hitting, maybe that's a different discussion, and maybe he's getting more time in center field, but he's not hitting right now. So many things going wrong are resulting in decisions being made that feel not quite right in the moment, but there's probably not a better decision because of the position that they are in at the time.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, I think that's a fair argument. And I think the team has been most definitely put in tough positions because of the Siani injury and some other things. But people keep talking about the development of Jordan Walker. And I guess to play the devil's advocate, my thought has been, how detrimental could a few weeks of platoon? Let's say the Cardinals are out of it in 3 weeks. Maybe we see Jordan Walker start playing every
day.
And maybe it's not a big deal. And people, well, obviously losing's a big deal, yeah. But maybe the Jordan Walker conversation isn't as big of a deal at that point.
If they fall out of it, he needs to either be starting every day in St. Louis or being back at Memphis starting every day. Like, I don't, whatever they think is best, but that is, that they need to have him do that. I got a text message. It's Graybar's Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, talking all things Cardinals baseball here during a Strike Zone Hour. If you want to join us, you can do so by calling, texting, or tweeting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, or tweet at me at Matt Pauly on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. What's on Deck, sponsored by Chesterfield Fence and Deck, the sign you have the very best. Cardinals Brewers opening up a three-game series tomorrow night. It's going to be Eric Fetty against Frankie Montas, two players acquired by their respective clubs around the deadline. 6:45 first pitch from Busch Stadium tomorrow night. Our coverage is set to begin at 5:50. Got a couple phone calls after the conversation I just had with Kevin Wheeler. Let's grab Larry, who has given us a call. Hey, Larry, you're on Sports Open Line.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Doing all right.
So at the beginning of the year, I text you. I picked the Cardinals to go 82-80. You know what? That's not going to happen. They would have to play 21-17 the rest of the year just to play 82-80. I see it. I don't see it happening.
I would agree that that is unlikely at this point. Not impossible, but unlikely.
Right. Yesterday's game really aggravates me. First of all, we had runner at the bottom of the order, got two singles in a row. I can't remember what inning it was. We were losing 2-0. Because Nupar hit a home run late in the game, right? Wasn't it like the eighth inning or something?
Yeah.
That made the score 2-1. So we got first and second, nobody out. And we got our leadoff man up. I'm thinking, here's the perfect opportunity to bunt. Get him to second and third with one out with what we call the heart of our order coming up, right?
Okay.
Why? Do you agree? Do you bunt there or no?
So what I'm trying to find it. What inning was, hold on. I'm looking.
I'm
for
thinking
it,
it was, I think it was the seventh
was
inning.
It the sixth when Páez and Scott went back to back on base hits.
Yes.
And then,
yes. Then Mason, the right field.
Okay. So you wanted Mason Winn to put down a bunt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Mason Winn has been one of your best hitters all season long. I think you've got a much better chance of scoring, letting him swing the bat, than putting a bunt down, especially with a guy like Wilson Contreras coming up next who can strike out, and he ended up grounding into a double play anyway. So, no, I do. Looking back at that situation, I would respectfully, I understand why you say what you say, but I want Mason Winn swinging away with a runner on at second.
Okay. So we disagree there.
Yeah, we do.
Secondly, Tommy Pham is 1-for-18 against Clayton Kershaw, and he hits him in the three hole. Burleson sits the bench. I don't know if it was time to sit the bench or he keeps him out because Kershaw's a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah,
that's lefty probably.
Burleson's numbers against lefties are terrible.
Okay, so
do you know how bad?
Wait a minute.
Okay,
it couldn't be any more terrible than 1-for-18, though.
No, you're right. It's not worse than that. But Burleson's numbers this year against lefties, he's a 203 hitter with a sub-600 OPS. I mean, it is. I really, really like Alec Burleson, but his numbers against left-handers are really bad.
And one last thing. You know, the right fielder they called up a couple weeks ago, he just can't square the ball up.
Jordan Walker?
I mean... Yeah, he can't square the ball up. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I don't know. Larry, I appreciate the phone call.
All right.
Yeah. Look, Walker hits the ball hard. When he makes contact, he hits the ball hard. His hard hit rate has always been there. I think he's had, towards the end of his first stint with the team, he started not making as solid a contact. He's still doing something right now where he is trying to drive the ball more, and that's something that he has to do. I'm not worried about Jordan Walker's ability to hit the ball hard. I'm worried about his ability to drive the ball, and those are two different things, I think. And Walker's got to figure out how to drive the ball. I am concerned about Walker not playing every day. They're doing the left right stuff with that, and I understand that situation. But as a young guy, I would like to see him get more of an opportunity. And the Cardinals are stuck in this really tough area where trying to win every day, but also not stop the development of a player for sure.
Here's a question for you, Matt Pauly. I'm curious, if the Cardinals, they're in this spot right now where we're not sure how long they're going to be even in the race, are we okay for these next few weeks platooning Walker? Is the next few weeks of platooning Walker for the potential to put the best team on the field, is that going to be detrimental to his development?
I hope not. Probably not. Like you have to value winning games over. That's where roster construction comes into the issue, because you were basically forced to bring up Jordan Walker because you were forced to bring up a right-handed bat who can also play the outfield. And they just didn't have enough flexibility on the roster to be able to do that. That's why they're forced to run out Victor Scott there and have him on the roster. And admittedly, Scott's done a much better job at the plate here on this second stint than he did his first stint, but he's still not hitting, you know, especially well. But you're stuck in this situation because you're so hell-bent on having a good defensive center fielder out there that you're willing to take the lack of offense. Now, if Lars Nootbaar was hitting, maybe that's a different discussion, and maybe he's getting more time in center field, but he's not hitting right now. So many things going wrong are resulting in decisions being made that feel not quite right in the moment, but there's probably not a better decision because of the position that they are in at the time. Yeah. If that makes sense.
No, I think that's a fair argument. And I think the team has been most definitely put in tough positions because of the Siani injury and some other things. But people keep talking about the development of Jordan Walker. And I guess to play the devil's advocate, my thought has been, how detrimental could a few weeks of platoon? Let's say the Cardinals are out of it in 3 weeks. Maybe we see Jordan Walker start playing every
day.
And maybe it's not a big deal. And people, well, obviously losing's a big deal, yeah. But maybe the Jordan Walker conversation isn't as big of a deal at that point.
If they fall out of it, he needs to either be starting every day in St. Louis or being back at Memphis starting every day. Like I don't, whatever they think is best, but that is that they need to have him do that. I got a text message from the 256 disagreeing with me, saying that Mason Wynn should have bunted in that spot. Nobody in this world can convince me that with a runner on at second, and Mason Wynn has been one of your two best hitters this year all season long, that I would guarantee you, if you run those numbers, you have a much better chance of scoring a run with Mason Wynn swinging away with a runner on at second than him punting a bunt down and even putting the runners at third with less than two outs.
And
people don't believe me, but the numbers are going to back that up.
And was your best hitter in the lineup at that point? Because I don't think Burley had entered the game yet either, so keep that in mind as well.
That's a good point as well. One other text real quick before we take a break, and I get frustrated by texts like these because they come off as being just so mean-spirited. It says, why has Gorman not been in single A ball since the start of June trying to learn how to hit? The number of wasted at-bats by the team is unreal, and they just keep sending the same guys to the plate knowing that's most likely going to happen again and again. Do players even try to learn anything about hitting when they're in the minors? First off, the reason I hate this text message is because it's mean-spirited when you say, well, we should be down to AAA. Like, that's, no. Is there a conversation to be had about whether or not it would make sense to send Nolan Gorman to AAA to work on some things? Sure, that's a legitimate conversation. But when you put in that BS about single A, you sound like a jerk. So at that moment, I don't even want to deal with this text message. So let's have conversations where we don't go to the lowest common denominator. Let's have conversations where we don't take pot shots at people for no reason. Gorman has really struggled. Is there value in getting him off this big league roster? Maybe. I mean, he's shown the ability, though, to hit at AAA. I don't know what happens for him at AAA unless there are mechanical changes that they want him to make and they feel like he needs to start making those right now. If they have identified those mechanical changes, then getting him off the big league roster and putting him somewhere else for him to start working on those things, yes, there is some sense to that. There's also some sense to, hey, this guy has the ability to hit a home run, and you never know where you're going to get it. So he can drive in runs. He's got that explosive ability at any moment in time, like not many players on your roster have. You'll work on the mechanical changes in the offseason. One more break. We'll come back, wrap up this edition of Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Just a couple minutes left in this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, but you don't want to go anywhere at 8 o'clock. Not that you ever would want to go anywhere here on KMOX, but especially tonight, St. Louis City Soccer Report's going to be on. Nate Gatter, Jen Cease will be with you from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, and Nate Gatter is with us. Hello. Right now. I can't even talk. Hello, Nate. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right. What's on the program tonight?
Well, we're going to have Dale and George, as we always do. And then we'll be talking at 8:30 to a gentleman who runs an account that some soccer folks might be familiar with on Twitter. And in fact, if you aren't, it might almost be more valuable than if you are a soccer person, which is at STL Soccer News on Twitter.
I've seen that.
Yeah, and it kind of almost an aggregator of various soccer information around St. Louis from all different levels. And I think something that's really useful to a lot of people, maybe even more so to the casual soccer person who's still trying to get into the game. The guy's name is Chris Gebhardt, so he will join us at 8:30. And then in the second hour, we're going to be talking a little St. Louis Billikens women's soccer, and we're going to do something we don't normally do. We're going to have Katie Shields on, the head coach of the women's team, who's been on the program a couple of times. And we're also going to hear from Jennifer Rockwood, who is the head coach of the BYU women's team, who are top five in the country, one of the most successful teams in America the last 5 years or so, and before that, but especially the last half decade. And they're coming to Herman Stadium on Thursday to play SLU, who will play BYU, and then on Sunday they'll play Penn State, both at Herman Stadium, both top five teams. So we're really excited to talk to Katie about that.
I love the way they schedule, because they know they want their goals, national title, and they got to see those teams in non-conference.
And their conference is just so weak. I mean, it's really unfortunate. It would be great if the SLU women's team could somehow find a way to play in a big league in every other sport. The A-10 is a great conference for SLU. The vast majority of the time for women's soccer, it's just not good enough, which is unfortunate.
Although but it means men's basketball right now, that is not a very good league either.
It's not as good as it used to be back in the Majerus days, when it was really a great, great fun league. But for women's soccer, it really is a bummer. And I know they respect those opponents, and that's part of the reason that they wax them every year. They don't take them lightly. But for RPI purposes and overall resume purposes, they really need to play a tough non-conference schedule, and that's what they're doing.
Have a good show.
We will do our best.
Very good. That's Nate Gatter. You're going to hear him along with Jen Cease coming up in just a few moments or so. I'll be back with you tomorrow for Cardinals baseball. They open up a 3-game series against the Brewers. Big series, just because the Cardinals need to win as many games as they possibly can. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on KMOX. Just a couple minutes left in this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, but you don't want to go anywhere at 8 o'clock. Not that you ever would want to go anywhere here on KMOX, but especially tonight, St. Louis City Soccer Report's going to be on. Nate Gatter, Jen Cease will be with you from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, and Nate Gatter is with us. Hello. Right now. I can't even talk. Hello, Nate. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right. What's on the program tonight?
Well, we're going to have Dale and George, as we always do. And then we'll be talking at 8:30 to a gentleman who runs an account that some soccer folks might be familiar with on Twitter. And in fact, if you aren't, it might almost be more valuable than if you are a soccer person, which is at STL Soccer News on Twitter.
I've seen that.
Yeah, and it kind of almost an aggregator of various soccer information around St. Louis from all different levels. And I think something that's really useful to a lot of people, maybe even more so to the casual soccer person who's still trying to get into the game. The guy's name is Chris Gebhardt, so he will join us at 8:30. And then in the second hour, we're going to be talking a little St. Louis Billikens women's soccer, and we're going to do something we don't normally do. We're going to have Katie Shields on, the head coach of the women's team, who's been on the program a couple of times. And we're also going to hear from Jennifer Rockwood, who is the head coach of the BYU women's team, who are top five in the country, one of the most successful teams in America the last 5 years or so, and before that, but especially the last half decade. And they're coming to Herman Stadium on Thursday to play SLU, who will play BYU, and then on Sunday they'll play Penn State, both at Herman Stadium, both top five teams. So we're really excited to talk to Katie about that.
I love the way they schedule, because they know they want their goals, national title, and they got to see those teams in non-conference.
And their conference is just so weak. I mean, it's really unfortunate. It would be great if the SLU women's team could somehow find a way to play in a big league in every other sport. The A-10 is a great conference for SLU. The vast majority of the time for women's soccer, it's just not good enough, which is unfortunate.
Although but it means men's basketball right now, that is not a very good league either.
It's not as good as it used to be back in the Majerus days, when it was really a great, great fun league. But for women's soccer, it really is a bummer. And I know they respect those opponents, and that's part of the reason that they wax them every year. They don't take them lightly. But for RPI purposes and overall resume purposes, they really need to play a tough non-conference schedule, and that's what they're doing.
Have a good show.
We will do our best.
Very good. That's Nate Gatter. You're going to hear him along with Jen Cease coming up in just a few moments or so. I'll be back with you tomorrow for Cardinals baseball. They open up a 3-game series against the Brewers. Big series, just because the Cardinals need to win as many games as they possibly can. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on KMOX.